ARVS.org.
Hello and welcome to Bayou de Beltway. I'm your host, Pearson Cross. Today we are welcoming Judge Jules D. Edwards III, who is currently running for the Lafayette City Court after a quite lengthy career on the 15th District Court. Judge Edwards was born in New Orleans. He was educated at Loyola. He got a law degree there. He went on to get other degrees, a master's in public administration from LSU, a master's in at the War College for Strategic Studies. He served for 27 years on the 15th District Court, Seat B, and he's now attempting to move, after that long and illustrious career, to the Lafayette City Court, and he is here to talk to us about it. Judge, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. It's great to be with you today.
Well, it's great to have you. So tell me, when people vote for a judge, what should they be thinking about? What's the most important consideration? What should they keep in mind?
Well, I think that they should be very concerned about the judge's experiences, both, life experiences, legal experiences, and the qualifications that the judge brings, the judicial candidate brings to bear. In order so that the voters can select the person who is the best qualified for the job. Of course, temperament and suitability, those are all additional considerations as well.
Okay, well, now we've all heard about temperament. What would you say is judicial temperament?
Well, judges are ethically required to be patient, to be courteous, and to recognize the dignity of every person that comes into court. Of course, you want a judge to also be curious. We often hear complaints that the judge was bored, the judge is not paying attention. So you want to have a judge who's curious to learn what the facts are, and a judge who is industrious, who is willing to do the research to determine what facts apply to that particular dispute. So those are all important qualifications.
So patient, courteous, curious, industrious. How can we tell that? I mean, we don't typically know much about judges, do we? And certainly, how would you know that in terms of a judicial candidate? How would you be able to tell that this person has a temperament, has the right temperament, I should say?
That is correct. So the only way I can think of to do that would be to have people who have had an opportunity to observe the judicial candidate in the past to see if they have those qualifications and ask them about that. So that would, in a job like this, that would typically be lawyers, all right? Or it could be people who are regular witnesses. So it may be law enforcement officers who regularly testify, doctors who regularly testify, engineers, people who serve as expert witnesses who've had a regular opportunity to be in the presence of the judicial candidate. So that could be a lawyer who takes depositions, right, and has an opportunity to be in the front of those folks. Or it could be a person who has already served as a judicial officer, and, lawyers have observed them. People have come to the courtroom and observed the judge. Witnesses have testified before the judge. So if I were a voter, I would be seeking out somebody with that kind of experience to share with me some information about the judicial candidate.
We do elect judges here in Louisiana, and so we ask voters to weigh in on who they think would be the judge. I'm going to ask a slightly different question, and that is, to what extent does it matter which judge you get on your case? Are judges important to the system, or is there an attempt to have what would be a uniform standard of judgment? Does it matter if you have Judge A versus Judge B?
Oh, I think it matters quite a lot. Yes. Every human being has varying levels of skill, okay? And so some judges are very skillful. Some judges are very diligent. Some judges have done a lot of research on a particular topic, right? So it really matters which judge is the one who tries the case. But kind of allied to your question, but not exactly the same, is, you know, what's the right method of selecting judges? You know, so in some states, judges are appointed. In other states, judges are elected. And my response to that is, I don't know. However, there is no way to take the politics out of the decision of who is going to be the judge. What the only difference is, who is going to be the person making the political decision? Will it be the voters making the political decision of which person will serve as a judge? Or will it be the appointing authority who makes that political decision? But in any event, having said that, judges are not supposed to be political actors. Judges are supposed to be neutral and impartial. So it really shouldn't make a difference what political party that the judge is or holds. Because judges are supposed to listen to the evidence, determine what facts have been proven, particularly trial court judges are supposed to listen to the evidence, determine what facts have been proven, research the law to see what law applies to that factual dispute, and apply that law facts fairly and impartially, not favoring, like my wife's parents say, I don't favor the buyer, I don't favor the seller, I'm for what's right. That's what you want for a judge.
You raised an interesting point, and that is trials. So not every court in Louisiana sits with a jury, is that correct, and conducts kind of a trial?
That is absolutely correct. We have three branches of government, we have three levels of our court system. So the first level is the trial court, and then above that is an appellate court, and above that is a Supreme Court. So at the trial court, that is where the trial occurs. People come and they present evidence, they make arguments, the judge or the jury, if it's a jury case, they make the decision. And then if the person who was unsuccessful, the person who lost the case, is unhappy, thinks something went wrong, they can appeal that case to an appellate court. So the trial court has two functions. One, it must hear the evidence, resolve the dispute, and it must produce a record of what occurred, what evidence was submitted, what were the arguments that were submitted that led up to the decision. And then once that record is prepared, the loser can take that record, that written report of everything that occurred at the trial, take that to an appellate court, which will then review that record to see if there were any mistakes made at the trial. If they don't like the appellate court decision, they can take it up to the Supreme Court. Those are the three levels of court. And we have in Louisiana two different trial courts that have concurrent jurisdiction, two trial courts that are presided over by judges. And so that would be state trial courts, and I serve on a state trial court, and also city courts, and that's the position I'm trying to go to. And so a state trial court and a city court have what we call concurrent jurisdiction. That means they have the authority to handle the same kinds of cases, and those are civil cases, juvenile cases, criminal cases, and traffic cases. Now, the law that applies in civil and juvenile is exactly the same in city or state court. The law that applies in civil and criminal is the same, but what is at stake is less in city court. So in a state court, there is no limit to the civil harm that you can seek redress for. So if you were harmed and the person who harmed you, it will take $1 million to repair that harm, you can get that relief in state court. In city court, it's limited to $20,000. So if you have damages more than $20,000, that needs to be litigated in state court, not city court. Now, with criminal, state and city court both handle misdemeanor cases, but the misdemeanor cases in city court are limited to those kinds of cases that could result in a penalty of 6 months in jail and or $500 as a fine. So that's kind of a roadmap.
Yeah, interesting. Now, you didn't say something that I was waiting for you to say. You said there were three levels of courts, but then there are also minor courts, aren't there, in the
yes.
overall system?
Yes. So there are justice of the peace courts, and the justice of the peace is a person who is an elected official, but that person is not necessarily even a lawyer. And so this election period, November 3rd, there are several justice of the peace candidates on the ballot. We also have something called mayor's courts. So a mayor has the authority to preside over violations of city ordinances. Typically, the mayor would appoint a lawyer to do that. And then there are parish courts, which is again a step below a state court, but it's a local governmental court.
What about divorce courts or drug courts?
I see. So those are technically really special dockets. They're not standalone courts. So here in state court, in the 15th Judicial District Court, we have several special dockets. So we have two divisions of our court. So two judges in our court have voluntarily agreed. See, our court is a general jurisdiction court. Every judge in the 15th Judicial District Court has the authority to preside over any and all of the types of cases that can come to the state court. However, two of our judges have agreed that they will limit their jurisdiction to domestic matters, divorces, community property separation cases that have a child custody component. So two divisions of our court are devoted to resolving child custody disputes, and one of those divisions is up, is contested now. So we have a vacancy, and so there are three lawyers contending for Division M, and Division M is assigned that domestic docket. So that's on the ballot this November 3rd. People are voting for those candidates today, early voting. And then also we have specialty courts, which we have family preservation court. Those are people, parents, their children have been taken from them by the state because of abuse, allegations of abuse or neglect. And those parents typically have some substance abuse problem, and they've agreed to voluntarily participate in substance abuse treatment and parenting classes as part of the effort to get their children back. And then we have drug courts for juveniles and adult drug court programs. We have a reentry court program. And so I preside over the reentry court docket and the adult drug court docket. The reentry court docket is for individuals who have committed rather serious offenses, and they're going to be sentenced to prison. And as long as the sentence is for 10 years or less, they may be able to qualify to participate in the reentry court program, which has a component, a custodial component at Angola, Louisiana, Louisiana State Prison, where they receive instruction, vocational instruction, that will allow them to obtain a national certification and a vocational skill that will allow them to earn above a living wage. And they also are working with moral mentors who will help them to get their moral compass pointed towards true north. And once that occurs, they are able to be released and returned to our community under the supervision of a judge, and they're on probation, and they come to the judge on a regular and frequent basis to make sure that they are on track.
Well, let me stop you right there for a second. So if you just tuned in, we are talking to Judge Jules Edwards, who is running for a city court position after having been at the State District Court, 15th District, for quite a number of years. You know, some people have said, it's a curious thing for a district court judge to run for a city court. Some people said It seems like a lateral move or a step down. You specifically said you wanted to move upstream in the judicial system. Would you mind explaining what you mean by that?
Absolutely, yes. I have to take that on head on. It is very unusual for a state judge to want to become a city judge. I only know of two or three other occasions where that has occurred. Most state trial court judges want to become an appellate court judge or a Supreme Court justice. That's the normal route because that's, you know, it's more prestigious going up. However, after my 27 years of service, I have been very gratified that I've been very successful at getting people off the road to perdition and onto the road to contribution. However, that very same success is also a source of frustration, because usually by the time I'm able to interact with these folks and give them that inspiration in as a result of a felony conviction, they have often had one or two or more convictions in city court, one or two or more convictions in state court that are misdemeanor convictions, and then, you know, I see them for a felony conviction, and every time there is a conviction, that means there's been someone else who was harmed. There's been a problem. Our sense of security in the community has been diminished. And so I just think if I can go upstream and interact with folks in city court before they have embarked on this criminal career, and I can get them on the right path, then by definition, we will have made our community much more safe. And of course, that's better for everybody who lives here, everybody who visits here. The individual, the person who is engaged in the wrongful conduct, is better for that person, their family members. I think I can have a much more significant impact in city court than I've had in district court. That's the motivation.
Well, that certainly makes sense. Let me ask this. I mean, you've had a bird's eye view of the functioning of the criminal justice system, the judicial system, for the last 27 years, and even before that when you served in other positions. I think you were assistant district attorney, and you also worked a bit with indigent defense, I think, at some point. So, you know, Louisiana leads not only the United States, but also the world in terms of the percentage, per capita percentage of people that we are keeping in prison or jail. With your insight into the system itself, what's going on that we should have numbers that are so so high in comparison with the rest of the United States, generally speaking, and then clearly with the rest of the world?
Well, really, it has been the result of largely politicians inciting the fear of the populace. You know, before I was elected, I worked for the Louisiana Senate, and I was the counsel to the Senate's Select Committee on Crime and Drugs. And it was thought at that time that we had a significant drug problem, and it was inspiring a lot of crime, and that crime was causing a lot of harm. And at that time, frankly, there was this mentality of we just need to lock them up and throw away the key. You know, remember the crime bill that Vice President Biden was the author of, changed the rules and had lots of mandatory minimums as a federal law, but state law kind of mirrored it, and folks were intending on locking folks up and throwing away the key. I thought that approach was wrong. It's fiscally imprudent. It's very expensive to lock people up for long periods of time, and then we do not provide rehabilitative programming for them while they're incarcerated, we have to expect that they're going to come out worse than when we sent them in. And when they come out, they're going to come back to the community that sent them. That just seems wrong-headed. And so that was what inspired me to do the research and decide that drug courts was a way to go, and providing people with swift consequences to poor behavior and giving them the tools to behave better. That was a more effective way to do it. And in fact, the science has proved me correct. There are evidence-based sentencing practices now that codify this, evidence-based screening tools to be able to be used to make sure that we know the type of person that we're sentencing, and the sentence is specific for that person to make help them become better and not help them to become worse. And I think that my firm yet fair approach has been proven, and I want to bring that to city court.
Interesting. So you said a couple of things. You want to bring that to city court. Well, now you've been an innovator a bit, I think, on the district court, a person who got drug courts going and did some things that hadn't been done. Will there be an opportunity to do this kind of innovation in the city court?
Oh, absolutely. Clearly, yes. There's some things that we can do really quickly, and then there's going to be some things that will take a little more time and investigation to make sure that those are the types of things that need to occur, and I think I have the skills to do that. Let me tell you that one of the things that's most important about the efficacy of a court is this notion of procedural fairness. So judges must be perceived as behaving in a legitimate way so that people will comply with those orders. You know, now we have sort of a crisis of institutions throughout our country, and many people are concerned that the justice system is rigged, it's not fair. So judges have got to behave in a way that would let people know that it's a fair deal. So this procedural fairness has four concepts: voice, neutrality, respectful treatment, and trustworthy authority. Voice means the person who is in the courtroom has got to know that the judge is listening to them. The judge wants to hear what they have to say. Neutrality, that the people in the courtroom have got to look at the judge and say, that person is fair. That person is not for one side or the other. The people in the courtroom have got to look at the judge and see that the judge is treating everyone he comes in contact with respect, recognizing that every human being is dignity. And the judge has got to be seen as trustworthy, a person of integrity. When that happens, the court is perceived to be legitimate. So easy things we can do is provide material that explains the various types of cases and what the litigant should expect when pursuing the various types of cases. At the beginning of the day, the judge should announce what the court's business is, what's going to be the sequence of events, how things are going to occur. People come to the courthouse, they're afraid, they're terrified, you know, and so the judge has got to recognize that trauma is a significant reality in our life, and we must be sensitive to that reality. And of course, there are again these evidence-based practices for courts, evidence-based screening instruments that the judge can use. Those are all things that can be brought to city court.
You know, when people, there have been a number of, I want to talk about Black Lives Matter movement just a little bit. There have been a number of obviously, incidents that took place with the police. And oftentimes when people look at the criminal justice system, they say, this is a system that has really dramatic problems. It has problems at nearly every level. It has problems at the police level, which certainly we're brought aware of, you know, every time you turn on the TV, which is not to say that I'm not saying something general about cops in general or policing. I'm just saying there are some problems there. But then there's also people who study the system point to the discretion that district attorneys have in bringing charges, not bringing charges. They have enormous discretion in the way our system is set up. And then it moves on to the judges. So is there a sense that in your mind that in terms of this kind of enormous incarceration experiment that we're involved in, that one of those portions of the criminal justice system is more responsible than any other? Where does reform start is what I'm talking about. If you were to say, I want to reform this, where do you start?
Well, I think global reform is required. So I'm a believer that the legislature should liberalize the amount of discretion that judges have. There are still many offenses for which there are mandatory minimums, all right? And really the existence of a mandatory minimum gives the district attorney lots of leverage. I think that we should be careful in our discernment of who we select as judges And once we have selected good judges, we need to let good judges judge. We shouldn't let the process be overly stacked in, to give extra weight to the prosecutors. And the front end of the system starts with law enforcement, right? So law enforcement officers need to have great training on how to use their great discretion, right? So law enforcement officers should be able to know when it's more appropriate to issue a summons rather than make an arrest. Law enforcement officers should be able to detect when they're dealing with someone who has a mental illness, and that person really should be brought into the mental health system as opposed to being brought to the jail. Prosecutors need to remember that they have ethical obligations to only prosecute individuals that they have evidence to prove that that person committed the crime. So prosecutors shouldn't be engaged in overcharging. So charging, we have far too many instances where people who are charged with an armed robbery, and when the case is resolved years later, the person pleads guilty to a simple theft. Right. So there's a lot of changes that need to happen. And some of it requires legislation. Some of it simply requires some policy changes. And a lot of it requires training.
Speaking of training, you said something earlier that I want to get back to because it was intriguing. You said when people were considering why they should support one judge or another, you said something about judicial skill. And I don't think I really understand what skill would be in a judge. Can you explain, you know, we're getting towards the end of the show, but if you have a few seconds to talk about skill, what does that mean?
Oh, absolutely. So there are courses that are taught specifically to judges. So the Louisiana Judicial College provides legal education to judges on the skills that the judges have to be familiar with. And I was on the board of governors of that organization, and I've also taught judges at all levels, city court, district court, appellate court, and Supreme Court justices. So judges have to know how to analyze evidence. Judges need to know what the evidence rules are. Judges need to know what the law is. Judges need to know about procedural fairness. Judges need to know about the adverse effects of trauma. Judging is an art form. It's not a science. And so it requires judges to have particular knowledge of all of the information that the judge will have to apply when doing judicial work.
That's interesting. The other thing you said, and we're really coming down, I think we got about a minute left, that you said, and I'd never thought about it before, but a judge needs to have curiosity. They need to know about something about a case and about the circumstances surrounding a particular issue, but they have to have that desire to want to find out about a case that's in front of them.
That is so very true. I mean, I'm sure you have heard at some point or maybe saw on a television program, the judge is falling asleep. You know, the judge is just bored. The judge is turning around, looking at the back of the wall. The judge is not meaningfully engaged in the litigation in front of the judge. And when that happens, people have disrespect for the result, right? People want to come to court and know that they were heard, know that the judge was paying attention. And the only way that can happen is if you have a judge who is curious, who actually wants to know.
Well, Judge, I appreciate that, but we are going to have to sign off. So we need a curious judge. Remind everybody to go out and vote in the upcoming election. We've been talking to Judge Jules Edwards. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Copyrighted by KRVS for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without written consent of KRVS is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of KRVS, its officers, or members. To listen to a podcast of the interview we just heard, go to krvs.org.
Enjoy Zydeco Blues and Old School R&B on the Zydeco Stomp, Saturdays from noon to 3, only on KRVS 88.7 FM and online at krvs.org.
Hey, listen!
Lucia Moon speaking, asking you nicely to tune in to Beat Current tonight at midnight, right after Hearts of Space, only on 88.7 FM, KRVS.
KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.